and welcome to Dirty Talk. I'm Viv, and I use she or they pronouns, and this week we're going to be doing, like, a check-in, regarding Roe v. Wade getting overturned, so yeah, passing it to Arna.
Yeah, again, my name's Arna, she, her pronouns, and yeah, for, you know, for my check-in, I guess, just today's a busy day, I fly back to New York tomorrow, but yeah, like Viv said, we're just gonna be talking about Roe v. Wade, kind of like a processing space and just how we feel. For reference, we have already done an episode on reproductive justice. We interviewed two organizers from Planned Parenthood, so definitely check that out. This episode is going to be focused more on, like, what comes next? What are our feelings? What does this mean? Rather than what is reproductive justice or, like, how do we go about it? For that, refer to our previous episode. But yeah. This is just more of, like, a processing space where we talk about how we're feeling about everything that's happening. But yeah, Viv, take it off.
Yeah, so I think the second the Politico draft leaked, I couldn't really understand. Well, I, like, understood what was going on, but I couldn't really process it. Like, I was, like, running up and down the hall of my dorm room, like, crying, like, calling my mom. Abortion access is something that I've always been, like, pretty passionate about, and is one of the reasons that I, like, wanted to join teen council, in high school. So, that was definitely, like, a big thing. It really hit me, like, super hard. And then I actually, like, either that night or the next day, I messaged Sejal. And I was like, hey, do you want to go protest with me? And she was like, yes, I'm, like, already planning on it. Like, I'll take you. And that was, like, a really, like, wonderful moment of solidarity just for me. Like, because Sejal and I hadn't hung out, like, that much over the course of the year or really at all. But to just be like, okay, this is someone that I know shares the same passion as me. I'm just going to reach out and see if she wants to do anything. And she did, and it was wonderful. Like, that was really reaffirming, for me to, like, go out and protest, and just see all of the people that, like, were also really hit by this, decision, was something that, like, was really powerful and important for me. Protesting is only a first step, like, I do want to say that, like, you should organize with people, above all else, but that was, like, just, like, the course of events leading up to, or after the draft got leaked, and then leading up to Roe v. Wade actually getting overturned, and kind of, like, what I did for myself to make things go a little better.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. And for reference to our audience, Sejal is another person we did teen council with. But yeah, I think for me, when I heard of, like, the draft decision, I was just, like, watching a movie with my friends. And I guess it was kind of, like, a numb feeling. Like, it was nothing that surprised me. Honestly, I was not surprised or shocked at all. Because I knew it was coming. Like, yeah. I knew that there were going to be, even before the draft decision, I knew that there were going to be, like, you know, challenging Roe v. Wade. So there was always that possibility of it being overturned. And given the state of our society, you know, the cynicist in me was like, yeah, there's a good possibility that they are going to overturn it, and we should be aware of that. Not that it has to happen, but, like, to fight against it, we need to be prepared for anything. So that was kind of just, like, a numb feeling. But then when the decision came out that they had overturned it, I was, like, at work in New York, at a cafe, and that was really, like, interesting. Like, that felt, I don't even know how to, like, describe it. Like, I had, in a way, expected it, but it was so horrifying that it had become real, and it took some time for it to sink in. For me, like, I was showing my coworkers, like, oh my god, it happened. And I remember the first thing I did was, and I heard the news from, like, the New York Times. Like, I got it from my New York Times notification. Usually, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie, I feel like I hear a lot of news from, like, people reposting on social media, mm-hmm. or just, like, my friends telling me, or, like, late news, but I opened my phone the second the New York Times was, like, Roe v. Wade overturned, and then I went to Instagram, and I wanted to see, like, what can I post, what can I do, are there any resources out there yet? Because in that moment at work, the immediate thing I could do was social media activism, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I can just, like, leave work and go to a protest. And I do think social media activism can be very effective in this day and age if you do, like, the right kind. Like, you know,
absolutely.
Post orgs to donate to or post.
Oh,
And rather than just, like, fancy slogans. Anyways, so I was, like, looking for stuff to post, but nothing was up yet because it hadn't been, like, mass publicized that Roe v. Wade had been overturned. Like, I guess no one had time to make posts yet because it had, like, just happened. But I remember just, like, frantically, like, needing to do something while I'm still at work. And then I got off work and I was, like, gonna go to this cafe and study because it was finals week for me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting in this cafe and I'm trying to, like, write all these essays, but I, like, cannot. I cannot because, like, I'm literally shaking. One might say it's because of the coffee, but I would argue only partly. But anyway, so I'm, like, literally shaking and I cannot concentrate on my essay. And I'm like, you know what? I need to write about Roe v. Wade. Like, that's what I need to do right now. And so I, like, wrote a little something about Roe v. Wade. I posted it on my Instagram for reference. But, yeah, I was, like, I just, like, need to, like, get this out. And then that evening, I went to a protest because they had one at Washington Square Park. And I ended up bumping into, like, these friends who are, like, a friend of friends. They're not... Well, now they are, but they weren't really, like, my individual friends. They were a friend of friend, but they were, like, from Brooklyn, and I, like, bumped into them out of nowhere. And we started talking, and I think that conversation for me was a very enlightening and helpful one. Because, you know, we were talking about how we're all so frustrated with the systems in America. Like, it just doesn't, like... It doesn't seem to be like anything's changing, even though we're trying so hard. It seems like we're even going so much backwards. But at the same time, we were talking about how we can't afford to be too frustrated and, like, you know, not vote anymore or anything like that. Like, it's like a fine line of, like, yeah, we're frustrated at the system and we don't think it's bringing any real change, but we still have to keep working how we can within the system. Because honestly, I think our voting system is absolute nonsense. The Electoral College is, like, the, like, what even? Like, we're not a real democracy.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But at the same time, you know, and the truth is, like, yeah, the popular vote is not the thing that makes a president, because Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. But anyways, that does not mean that I'm going to give up on voting or that other people should, because, like, we have to do whatever we can in this situation. But we were just talking about, like, that frustration of, like, yeah, like, genuinely, I don't think this is helping, but I'm going to keep doing it as much as I can. Or even talking about, like, I don't know what this protest is doing. Like, these protests I've been having for the past year, and, you know, like, nothing is changing. And that's more the frustration. It's not criticism, because I'm going to keep going to protests. Mm-hmm. And I think they are a good processing space and a space of solidarity. But, yeah, just reflecting on, like, what, like, how to actually achieve change. I mean, we're kind of talking about how we think that to, like, genuinely achieve change, we kind of need to dismantle a lot of structures in America. Like, I don't think we can achieve, like, proper change, radical change, with stuff like the Electoral College or the fact that Supreme Court justices have a lifetime term. Like, what is that? Like, that's not democracy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the president and appoints the Supreme Court justices. And, yeah, I know, like, the Congress, like, you know, confirms them in and whatnot, but, like, we don't vote on the Supreme Court justices directly. We hardly vote on anyone directly, first of all. And then it's, like, to have a lifetime, like, you can't vote them out super easily either. It's, like, a lifetime sentence.
Yeah.
Lifetime term. And so it's, like, yeah, it's just interesting to see, like, how we call ourselves such a, like, democratic nation, but where is the democracy? I'm just confused.
Oh, no, it's absolutely fucked. It's absolutely, like, we're descending into, like, a fascist surveillance state. I completely agree with you. I think, I mean, it's bullshit. Like, the Supreme Court is bullshit. And I have all of these conversations with my friends, who, like, share, like, a similar, like, politically left stance, and they're like, Vivian, like, why do you do all these things? Like, why do you still vote? Why do you still repost on your Instagram story or post on your Instagram story about, like, social justice? Why do you protest? Why do you do all these things? I don't see them, like, creating any concrete changes. And, like, what I will say is every time I post, like, something semi-original on my Instagram story, I get someone asking to repost it, and I get someone saying, hey, thank you for this information. So that's why I continue to do that. The second the Politico draft leaked, I found this Google Doc of abortion funds all across the nation, like specific localized abortion funds, so that you could donate specifically to states with trigger laws, to make sure that women and people with vaginas in those areas could continue to get access to abortion. And that was something that I had a lot of people, like, talking to me about on Instagram, like, after I put that on my story. People were like, wow, I, like, didn't know this. This is, like donating locally is a better way to create a larger impact with less money, all of these things. So, like, that is enough to keep me going. My, like, rules for my Instagram story, like, activism are kind of, I try to avoid infographics, and if I'm reposting an infographic, I, like, read through it and fact check it, because I do think a lot of information can, or misinformation can spread that way, and so it's something I try to avoid. I try and mostly repost, like, direct calls to action, whether it be, like, mutual aid, asking for donations, or protests, like, calls to protest in my area, and I think that that's generally, like, a good rule of thumb, is, like, a direct call to action, like, something people can put more power behind than a repost on their own Instagram story, or something that a repost on someone else's Instagram story, like, if they saw it on mine, would, like, potentially call someone else to action and to, like, doing something that would make an impact. But those are my little rules for my personal Instagram activism. And then in terms of, like, voting and going to protests, voting in your primary actually does a lot. And voting in local elections can accomplish a lot. This past year, I think the election for the Portland School Board was actually, like, pretty full of people that were pretty involved in QAnon. And so, like, doing research into that and making sure that I didn't vote for one of those people for, like, my local school board was something that definitely made an impact on my community, and keeping, like, the rise of conservatism out of my, like, local politics. So voting does do things. I think people that tell you that voting does nothing are either very focused on, like, general nationwide elections and have a degree of privilege, because it is a privilege to vote, and it is a privilege that you are just, like, throwing away if you don't vote. There are so many people that can't vote, and, like, abortion access, actually, like, now that Roe's overturned, like, women that get an abortion can become felons and can, like, have the right to vote taken away from them. So I think it's a really important right to acknowledge and to use accordingly. And then in terms of protest, I still go to protests, mostly as an act of solidarity and to be there as a resource for people, because I do have, like, knowledge from teen council, especially, like, regarding abortion access and things that, like, could possibly help someone there if someone there was struggling, or looking for help. So I go as a resource, and then I also go because it is a place that people, like, ask others to organize with. Like, I went to, this protest in Eugene afterwards, or during, this person stood up and was like, hey, like, protest is only the first step. Like, I saw this woman walking away today and, like, putting down her sign and saying, well, I did my part. And she was like, that's completely false. You are not done when you leave here. Like, you need to be organizing with fellow women. You need to be organizing. We only have power in numbers. Like, obviously, these things aren't working. Like you said, like, Instagram activism, voting, there are things that just don't work for us anymore. And the only way that we can, like, create change is to stand together.
Yeah, I definitely get that. Yeah, I think, you know, just to speak to a point about privilege, I feel like you talked about a lot. I think it's, I'm sure this has already been part of the discourse, but obviously, as we all know, this is affecting, like, BIPOC, LGBTQ, like, lower class people the most.
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, me and Vivian are both fairly, like, saved from this, because Oregon still has legal abortion, so does New York, you know, so we don't really have that much of an issue to deal with, but it's more the idea that this could even happen in our society, and it's that sense of solidarity that other women in, like, other parts of the country don't have that same privilege of accessing abortion, because at the end of the day, you know, abortion isn't even just about choice, it's about access, so it like, access has to be easily available. Now, obviously, we don't even have the choice, but even before that, even before Roe v. Wade was overturned, access was not super easy, even if abortion was legal. So I think it's important to understand that, yeah, we need to get back to where we were with Roe v. Wade, but also go beyond that. Because even Roe v. Wade, I don't think was enough when it comes to reproductive justice.
Yeah.
Like, we need to improve access to healthcare and make it more equitable for all demographics and all marginalized communities. I think that's so important. But yeah, I just think it's, like, super frustrating to think about this. It's definitely, like, gives you a sense of, like, cynicism, which I don't think we should hold on to for a long time, because that's then just detrimental to us fighting for our rights once again. But yeah, I think it's important to stay grounded and do what we can right now. And there is stuff we can do, you know. There's, like, underground abortion funds getting opened up. There's other ways to, like, fund abortions, or, like, yeah, I guess they would be, like, illegal now, but still, you know, to, like, build our own network of solidarity to help mm-hmm. those women in states or demographics where they can't easily access abortion is so important, just, like, rallying together. And also, like Vivian said, like, voting, because once we have a new cabinet, once we have a new, like, new leaders, there's a chance that we can bring Roe v. Wade back, or, like, you know, set another better precedent. But yeah, I think also a lot of anger that people had was towards the fact that Roe v. Wade was never codified into law. Mm-hmm. Like, there was all of this, like, rumors going around, and there was, like, this advanced knowledge that Roe v. Wade was being challenged. But none of our, like, senators or representatives really took a step to codify Roe v. Wade into law, which I thought was really disappointing. Like, I am very disappointed in the Democratic Party. I mean, I always have been, you know, because the Democratic Party in America is not, it's, like, moderate by all standards, I feel like.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you know, like, all these Democrats tweeting, being like, this is so sad, this is such a sad day for our country. Like, bro, you could have codified Roe v. Wade when you had the chance. And yeah, I get it. It's, you know, individual representatives and senators genuinely may not have that much power to codify Roe v. Wade, because I do know that sometimes you, like, propose a bill or you propose, like, a legislation, and it's just sitting on the floor for decades to come.
Yeah.
I get that. And that's another shitty thing about our government. But I'm just saying, it doesn't seem like anyone really tried to codify Roe v. Wade into law.
No. No, it didn't. And, like, my personal feelings around this are, honestly, not codifying Roe is a really powerful fundraising tool for the Democratic Party. Like, this is really, like, this is very, like, cynic, or, like, very cynical of me, but, like, it makes Democrats a lot of money not to have Roe v. Wade codified into law, and to be able to say, like, every election cycle, like, oh my god, Roe's in danger, you have to donate to my campaign now so that I can save it. Like, it supports, like, a very, like, it supports individual political platforms where people are gonna be like, okay, sweet, like, Roe isn't codified, I can use it as part of my own political stance. And as a way to get people to vote for me, and as a way to get people to give me money. Like, it's a way for the Democratic Party to continue getting money, because people, like, do a lot of, like, anger donating and a lot of, like, jumping to be like, oh my god. Well, especially in the case of reproductive rights, people are like, oh my god, like, this is something that, like, will fundamentally change my life if I no longer have access to it. So it's a really powerful tool, and, like, something the Democratic Party can leverage to get people to open their wallets.
No, definitely. And I think even now it's being used as a fundraising point.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree with that. And it's super frustrating. But, yeah, Do you want to move towards talking about, like, what we can do now more concretely before
yeah.
we wrap up?
Yeah, totally. Some steps that I've taken personally is to do some, like, personal research into different at-home abortion methods. Yeah. Just in case, like, I or a friend or someone, like, reaches out and is like, hey, like, I know that you're an advocate for this. Like, what can I do? Like, I need your help. Because there are ways that you can continue accessing abortion, despite it not being legal nationwide. And some things that I'll quickly touch on is, there are ways to order, like, the two-step pill system on the internet, and still get it to your home in a state where abortion is no longer legal. And you can find those ways pretty easily, and you can always message the podcast if you do need help, like, accessing that information, and I'll just, like, send it to you, like, no questions asked. There are, different herbal abortion methods, which I will say, like, you want to be definitely a lot more careful with. My grandmother, actually, like, how she got her start, like, in med school, was working with women who had made unsuccessful herbal abortions and who were, like, at an extreme risk of death. So I will say that is a method that I've, like, seen going around on the internet that is definitely something you want to be a lot more careful with and consulting a lot more people, that really know what they're doing. Like, it's not something you can just, like, order off the internet and trust, to work for you in the same way. And then there's also, I listened to this podcast actually from The Atlantic called The Experiment. And if you want to listen to the episode, it's called, like, The Resurgence of the Abortion Underground or something like that. And it was really interesting, and it talked about how these women, have built their own cannulas and have built their own tools to actually extract fetuses. And so that's something I'm also, like, just looking into more as, like, personal next steps to make sure that abortion access, like, doesn't end with me, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the abortion pills access is super important. I know that there's some organizing going around even in New York to have it available on campuses. Of course, mm-hmm. New York is a state where abortion is legal. But again, like I said, access needs to be improved everywhere nevertheless. While we do need to focus on those states where it is illegal, but, you know, just as someone living in New York, I know we've been organizing to make abortion pills available on campus, which would be really great. But yeah, abortion pills are a great way. And just, like, other, like, self-managed abortions, there's, like, trainings on that people can attend. Mm-hmm. So if you're someone who wants to get trained in that, even just to have that knowledge or to give that knowledge to someone else, I can, you know, DM us, I can send you a link. But a variety of different organizations are doing self-managed abortion trainings. Yeah, the pills are a great way. And also, I think, like, funding, like, local abortion clinics or just, like, funding. I think there are some organizations that, like, you fund them and then they give money to those who need it to get abortions, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure, like, the names of such organizations, but such, like, abortion funds where people can reach out if they don't have enough money to get an abortion. Yeah, I think those are all great.
Yes. Something else that I, like, advise people to do, just in general, is delete your period tracker. Delete your period tracker from your phone, because courts, if you successfully complete an illegal abortion and, like, stand on trial for it, courts can warrant your, like, access to your data from that app. And that's something that can be used against you in a court of law to, like, prove that you were pregnant and had an illegal abortion. So delete your period tracker. Don't talk. Like, recently there was a case of a woman and daughter who were, like, incriminated by their, like, texts over Instagram DM about getting an abortion. So, like, try not to talk about it in a place that can be traced back to you. Like, if you need to, a Signal is an encrypted messaging app that you can download, that will, like, encrypt your data And then you can just delete it so that it can't be accessed by people. But yeah, delete your period tracker, limit like conversation directly about it on the internet. If you do plan on doing something that's now illegal in your state, just keep yourself safe because, you know, information about yourself is important and you should treat it as such.
Definitely, definitely. I think that's super important. But yeah, we'll keep posting resources and action items on our podcast, you know, for like how to work with reproductive justice right now. And if you have any specific questions that you'd like us to address on this topic, we can definitely do another follow-up podcast, like just another follow-up episode. Mm-hmm. So if you have any questions or anything you'd like us to mention, like any ideas, any comments, feel free to DM us on our Instagram once again. But yeah, I think we're about ready to wrap up today. If you want to do media recs that might be related to reproductive justice, I don't know if you've had too many, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would restate that podcast from The Atlantic. It's called The Experiment. I don't remember the exact episode name, but I do think it has, like, something to do with abortion in the title. And I can, like, put it on our Instagram story, like, when this episode drops. That was a really good, like, place that, like, gave me hope of, like, there are all of these women that are learning how to, like, perform, like, actual, like, physical safe extraction, and it's a pretty easy tool to use. So that's something that I recommend for a lot of people, just, like, if you need, like, some self-assurance and some, like, motivation to start taking your own next steps. That was a really good, like, thing, for me. I'm trying to think of other things. I don't really know. Do you have any recommendations?
There was this one book. I forget its name. I think it was like, let me try to remember. Mm-hmm. I actually don't read a lot of nonfiction, and I feel like a lot of reproductive justice books are nonfiction. So, you know, to be completely honest, I don't always read a lot of books on it. I read like articles and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. I know that there's the Planned Parenthood biography, I think, of Margaret Sanger, or maybe the other president. But, yeah, I'm trying to think if there was this one book. I think there's this one book called, if I'm not wrong, Racial Reproductive Justice. No, that's wrong. Radical Reproductive Justice.
Sweet.
Which I think is pretty good. And that one, I think, has a lot of, like, intersectionality, and then there's also, I've heard, this one I haven't read personally, but it was the New Handbook for Post-Roe America. Mm. I haven't read it, but I've heard it's pretty good. And there's this, like, one other famous book that I cannot remember, that's just been, like, circling around a lot, that people have been talking about. But, yeah, there's also this documentary, The Jane Girls, I want to say, or something like that, I forget. It's about, like, the Jane, here, let me look it up so I'm saying the right name. But it's about the Jane Collective that was, like, this underground.
Yeah, I've heard of this. I think.
Yes, and there's a documentary, I think, on Hulu, maybe.
Mm.
But let me double check. The Janes is a, it's on HBO. So it's called The Janes, it's on HBO, so I think that's a good one. And yeah. I think I read a lot more articles than books on reproductive justice.
Yeah, I'm the same way, and I'm, like, trying to think if I can think of any off the top of my head, but I don't know if I can. Yeah, I think if, in general, if you want to look into, like, abortion access and, like, the history behind it, and everything, I would, look up the term reproductive justice and kind of... Yeah. Go from there, because that will, that term was coined by a collective of, Black women and women of color, and I feel like it's really important to center, people of color with uteruses in our conversation about reproductive justice, because that is going to be the demographic that is affected the most.
Definitely.
By the overturning of Roe, it's people that already, like, haven't had access to abortion and reproductive justice in general. It's people that have always been subject to limited autonomy around their reproductive rights, like groups of people that have always been forcibly sterilized, always been unethically, like, experimented on. And so it's really important to, like, consider these groups of people first in our conversations, and just, like, kind of ending with that as, like, I really want to stress that.
Yeah. And I think also, just as a quick note, and then we can move, you know, end the episode. Like Vivian said, the collective that coined the term was Sister Song, amongst other organizations. So I think Sister Song is a great resource for action items, maybe, or for just, like, theory around what does it even mean to, like, have a reproductive justice society, etc. So definitely check out Sister Song. But yeah, I think that's about it for this episode. Again, send us any comments or questions, and we'll definitely keep talking about reproductive justice. Our next episode is going to be a porn culture episode, and that's going to be our last episode for this season until we have a new cycle of episodes. We'll probably take a hiatus for a time until we can come up with new topics, etc. But yeah, we'll be interviewing someone from Quinn, which is this female-owned audio erotica art company. So yeah, check out, like, look out for that episode as well.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm really excited for that one. And then yeah, we'll be taking a break just kind of to recuperate. And also, Arna and I are, like, in school full-time, so it's definitely, like, a struggle to juggle the podcast, and being students. So yeah, but thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to y'all in the next one.
Bye.